This episode of Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcasting Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. Previously on Now and Again, Volume 2.
Sheryl Crow is fucking sexy.
You're getting the chair, man.
Yeah, dude, I should have tried to bang more chicks to play guitar back in the day.
I think seeing Shirley Manson at the age I did, and also a little bit like Fairuza Balk in The Craft, really gave me a type.
I have a cool story about Fatboy Slim if you want to hear it.
Oh, please.
Fatboy Slim and I got into a screaming match about a hard-boiled egg.
Please play this song on the radio. Please play this song.
It's Maya featuring a whole bunch of people. Blackstreet, Mace, and a guy named Blinky Blink. With
That's a great name, dude.
With Take Me There.
Yeah,
did
I
remember this song.
I didn't remember it. I had a little sister, so I remember I saw the Rugrats movie in theaters because, like, you know, we took her to, like, obviously I was, like, right around maybe, you know, 11, like, I was beyond Rugrats age, but...
Yeah, me too.
But, yeah, it was relatable because I had definitely seen the thing, and, like, I instantly picked up that this must have been in the movie. I don't remember it from the movie. I'm a fan of Maya. I like Maya a lot, so...
Same.
So, like, I had no problem with that. Blackstreet, I totally forgot about.
They're No Diggity, right?
Yeah, they've done something. I don't remember if it was that. I know their name. I don't remember what it was, but I just totally forgot about them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're No Diggity, which as a song I'll never forget, but definitely the artist of that is a bar trivia question.
Yeah, you're right. It's No Diggity. Yep, just looked it up.
And
yeah,
Mace was was Puffy's sidekick for a little while?
Yes. I actually have a lot of Puffy to address at the end of this, yeah.
Oh, well, go ahead. Jump right into it.
No. I mean, just if we're looking back on it, like the songs that were relevant at the time, like Mace and Puffy and Bad Boy were killing it these years.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
98, 99. So this was like a very poignant choice for them to, you know, have Maya and, you know, some of the Bad Boy family do.
And that's, you know, that's speaking of bar trivia, that's a great bar trivia question. Like, who had the first, like, $1 million video? I think most people would say Michael Jackson, but I'm pretty sure it was Puff Daddy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Puff Daddy, too. It was just like, you know, inflation, man. And besides Puffy, which is like way over the top. And dude, he fucking made bank.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I heard a really crazy story once. Actually, we can talk about it when we get to Jay-Z. Remind me of my Puff Daddy story.
Okay.
About Jay-Z whenever we get there.
This song reminded me of like a weird mashup you would find on the internet.
Yeah.
Because it's just got the Rugrats theme dropped right into it, into the beat. But despite that, I think the song is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, I really like that their interesting play with the Rugrats theme dropped into it. It was cool. It was something like, and Maya was playful about it. I really like the setup of the music video. You see that, like, we're still kind of in a place where, like, they had to build sets. They couldn't fully CGI shit.
Yeah.
So you get this, like, this griminess of the, and like the realness of like them like in a giant, you know, playpen, which I think is really cool that we lose a lot now, when you could just CGI the fuck out of everything, you know, you lose the, like, they had to make this set. So I respected that a lot.
Yeah, it creates more like of a surrealness instead of this artificial realness.
Yeah.
That is really distracting.
Yeah, it's really surreal because they're using like half CGI, but it wasn't advanced enough yet to cover everything. So yeah, I like that. I wish we could go back to that. Isn't that like something that like the dude that made The Dark Knight tries to do all the time?
Christopher Nolan?
Doesn't he kind of do like half CG? Like he bitches about he's like, I'm not trying to make a CGI movie. I only use it when I need to and stuff like that. And he like tries to use a lot of real explosions and makeup and stuff. So
yeah, I can always appreciate that, especially as someone I love horror. So it's always nice to see, like, a blood squib that's not CGI or, like, a monster that's
yeah,
fully practical.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was enjoyable. The rap part is really funny because Mace just kind of, like, shows up and is like, Angelica, she's this and this. And then Phil and Lil, they're this and this. It's the most, like, my name is Mace and I like to, like, blah, like,
yeah,
kind of rap thing ever. But, you know, it's... it fits with the tone of the song, which is very upbeat and childlike and full of wonder and adventure that Rugrats, I guess, had.
Yeah, and wrapped in the surrealism. I like this. I'm glad I remembered this. I probably won't play it again, but it's something to have in my repertoire.
And I feel like this must have been kind of the start of Maya, because I think we'll get to her in future episodes, but like she's going to have some good stuff coming up.
This definitely had to be early, yeah.
Well, someone who we've already visited and will be visiting quite a bit.
This is a good transition, because I was just thinking it. I was thinking about, is Aaliyah still alive at this time? Because Maya and Aaliyah were like, they're looking very similar from the last music video, so like now to R. Kelly. Is Aaliyah still alive?
That she is, because in the future we're going to touch on the song from Romeo Must Die, which she acted in.
Been a long time, Tom.
So I'm going to say yes, but we can let people tweet at us how wrong we are.
She died 2001.
Oh, so yeah.
And, damn, oh, wow, so she is already divorced from R. Kelly at this point. They were only married for a year until 95. So, this could have been a song about Aaliyah.
It absolutely could be. It's R. Kelly, When a Woman's Fed Up. And man, R. Kelly is such a fun... I mean, again, every episode, I'm sure, we will briefly mention, yes, R. Kelly, there's issues there.
Yeah.
But despite that, the dude made videos, man. He made little
sick-ass videos, dude. The videos are great, and his voice, like, in my notes I have, real life, R. Kelly could probably convince me to let him pee on me. Because, like, his voice is so buttery, dude. Just, like, he's saying the dumbest shit. Like, all of his lyrics are fucking stupid. But it just comes out so smooth, man. Like, if I could pick, like, one person's voice to have, it might be R. Kelly's.
It's so velvety and so smooth, and you just want to, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, the best way to describe how I feel about R. Kelly on this podcast is, my mind's telling me no, but my body... My body's telling me yes.
Yes. Yeah. I liked it. I like the videos. I'm a huge fan of R. Kelly's... really, really shitty songs. Like, I like, you know, The Closet. I like...
Oh, yeah.
I like... Do you remember my favorite one? You Remind Me of My Jeep?
No, but I love it. Is it just the same metaphor as Ignition?
Except Oh, God. You have to look this one up. And there's a music video for it, too. And you have to dig deep on the internet, because I don't know who tried to wash this one out, but it's great. Well, but
if I can find it, that's going in the liner notes of this episode.
Yeah, it's literally him walking around his Jeep being like, you got headlights, and like literally he just goes over every part of the car and says how it is like this woman. It is fucking terrible, and it's so velvety. I love it. But yeah, this is a great music video. It was super, like, it felt like The Wire to me, you know? Did it feel like a little bit like...
I get what you're saying. It's more... It's got this sinister tone, because there's like this moment where there's two people in the car, and they're dressed in all black... with, like, these black hoods on, like, they're going to, like, do... But they're just talking. And, like, it never gets to a sinister point. And so I see what you're saying, but it's, like, it's tonally very strange.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. Did you notice that the woman's name in the music video was Sparkle?
I did not.
I know, man. I was, like, wonder who... R. Kelly had to be... like, writing and directing most of these videos himself.
Oh, yeah, and that's the question I had, is, so this is the guy who did Trapped in the Closet. Do you think he is self-aware about how ridiculous some of this stuff is, or is it like a Tommy Wiseau thing, where he thinks he is making the most brilliant, poignant thing imaginable?
Yep. I believe that R. Kelly thinks that he's making, like, artistic work.
Yeah, I think I'm with you.
I don't think that he's, like, tongue-in-cheeking this shit at all. He's, like, really, really believing that this is, like, cool shit. I mean, maybe at the time it was cool shit. I think it is. I like it. I still like the music.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I like the video. It appeals to me. I love his voice, but it's super lame as fuck. Like, if you, like, break it down, it's lame.
Yeah. Yeah. R. Kelly is... I guess the best encapsulation of that is just the phrase... anytime I hear the phrase making love in music, that's a phrase that I don't think humans really use, at least not anyone my age, in real life to describe that act. Like, that's something that is solely for this genre of music and rom-coms.
Yes, and maybe, like, you know, like, smutty novels or something.
And, like, the Bad Company song, Feel Like Making Love, which I hate that song because of the use of that.
But, yeah, okay, I get it, yeah. So the cool part about R. Kelly, and I think that why we reminisce over him so hard, is who have we had that is R. Kelly since R. Kelly?
I mean, I think...
I can think of a couple people that kind of toe it, but nobody can match him. Like, no. What do we got now? We got Drake,
Drake and Chris Brown are who I was thinking of, but fuck Chris Brown.
You got T-Pain, kind of, right? But it's like...
I could get on board with Drake being the new R. Kelly.
Yeah, but it's not, but he doesn't have the butteriness of R. Kelly.
No.
Drake is doing, like, an impersonation of R. Kelly in today's world.
Yeah, I'm on board with that, 100%.
Yeah. So, that's what I think is going on. I don't think that we'll ever have someone that's, like purely... I mean, what do you... Okay, maybe you got The Weeknd.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe he's, like, the closest I think we'll get, but... It's not R. Kelly, man. R. Kelly was, like, purely cheesy, you know? Like, but cheesy, and it didn't matter because he was just this dude.
Yeah, and that's... And I think that's the difference between, like... You've got making love music, which is, like, R. Kelly. And then you've got... You know, there's artists that are just... They're fuck music, and it's different.
Yeah,
it's
baby
different.
Making music.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And, yeah, but that said, I'm still on board with R. Kelly. I really am...
Dude, you get that slow hip gyration as soon as it comes on, you know what I mean? You get that, like, little head nod, like, yeah, you know? Like, as soon as any R. Kelly song, like, this is exactly what happens, so.
And I'll bring it up every time because I don't think it's on and now. Like, man, the remix to Ignition is one of my favorite songs, seriously.
Yeah, it's still hot, man. I would listen to it today. I'd love, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. Dude, and he had this, like, crossover fun shit. I want R. Kelly to come back. He needs to do more features, man. Like, so many more dudes need to pull R. Kelly up and do features with him. Like, why isn't there a Drake and R. Kelly hit? Why isn't there The Weeknd and R. Kelly hit? Why isn't there a Chris Brown and R. Kelly hit? Like, they should all be, like, chomping at the bit to get some R. Kelly vocals on their tracks.
Holy shit, like...
Yeah.
Any... Like, if you can't get two pandas to have sex to save their species, you play some... The R. Kelly and Drake collaboration, and bam, just... Through the airwaves, you have new panda babies.
Exactly, dude. That's what's going to happen. I'm telling you. See, I wish I worked in music sometimes so I could, like, piece this shit together. Like, you have, like, all these artists that are like, oh, you know, like, let's do throwbacks with, like, some old dudes. Like, you know, you get, like, the RZA on tracks with, like, you know, Earl Sweatshirt and shit like that, which is really cool. But, like, why the fuck is Drake and R. Kelly not doing songs together? Why does he have a mixtape with Future but not R. Kelly? Like, they should have a fucking EP together. Just five songs of just, like, smash music like this.
Yeah, I mean, if R. Kelly is just straight up retired from music, then I hope he's enjoying his retirement on some lovemaking beach amazing island with all of his piles of money. But, like, man, I wish he would just, even if he just came back and produced, like, I'm in.
Yeah. I want more of R. Kelly. I do.
Yeah, I think that's a good note to end the, When a Woman's Fed Up on. And let's go into Father of Mine by Everclear.
Ooh, this song down. Is heavy, dude. This is a heavy-ass song for how upbeat it sounds.
Yeah. I mean, I learned while doing some research that this guy's name is not Art Alexis, as I've been calling him forever. It's like Art Alexicus, which I'm just going to keep calling him what I always thought it was.
Art Alexis? I didn't know his name. Yeah.
There's a K in there somewhere. And I mentioned on the first episode, there's never been a musician who wears, like, his discussions with his therapist so heavily on his sleeve in his music.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, this is like the scumbag dad anthem.
Oh, yeah. And normally I would, yeah, I said I want music that makes me feel, but
I don't want to feel like this.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't, it's so, the way he says stuff, like, there's the line, like, I was a scared white boy in a black neighborhood, like, that, it's show, don't tell. Like, you learn that very early on in any creative writing class, and he's just laying out all of his feelings.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely giving it all to you. There's nothing to guess at here.
Yeah, and it's not in a way that hits me emotionally. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. I don't know if I want it.
Yeah, I feel you. This one, yeah, it makes me feel some type of way. Like, dude, I had my dad, you know what I mean? And this still makes me feel fucked up about this song. Like, damn, dude, I can't imagine what this... I want to know what his dad thinks about when he hears this song on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has to still play, dude. He's, like, at a bar, like, drinking by himself, and they're like, ain't that your kid, Tom? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a weird side thing to this that I want to bring up, because I deleted it from the first episode, and I will publicly apologize to Nico, my guest on the first episode, because he brought this up, and I couldn't verify it, and I wanted to verify it before I threw it out there.
So now you're just going to steal his whole fact.
Okay, well, I'm giving it to him. I think part of it is because I was Googling Art Alexis and not Art Alexakis or whatever his stupid name is.
Okay.
Is that he has this line about how, like, he'll be a better father and he would never do that shit.
Yes.
He was arrested for domestic abuse in, like, 1992.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's domestic abuse. That's not child abuse.
Yeah, well...
So, like, beating your wife doesn't mean that you're a bad father.
I think it actually does, though.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it could have been before he had a kid.
Sorry,
but
that
still.
I'm sorry that I'm laughing at domestic violence. I'm just laughing at the idea of him saying he's going to be a better father and then getting arrested for beating his wife.
Right,
that's
and
fucking
I think
hilarious.
When I eventually found it was it's not in his Wikipedia, so I guess I'll throw out allegedly he did all of these things. But it seemed to have come from a time, like, a very low point in his life, like, even before Everclear was, like,
he was listening
real
to his
thing.
Own music too long,
yeah.
Or something.
He eventually, like, I guess he said in the interview, like, he learned from it, and then the band started getting better once he cleaned up and all of the stuff like that.
So did it happen before the song or after the song?
It was, like, 92 or something like that.
Oh, so it's before the song. Okay.
Sure.
So, okay, so he could have taken, I mean, people can change. I can see this. But yeah, it's still funny that he says, like, I'm going to be a better father. Did he beat his baby's mom? Or was it another woman?
It's actually very tough to find information on this.
Damn it.
He's buried it pretty well on the old internet. I guess there's just so many, like, 90s artists who were probably real pieces of shit that he got.
Yeah. Well, we come from R. Kelly peeing on a 14-year-old to this, so.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't that bad in the grand scheme of things, right?
I think most people just want to talk about his dysfunctions that he's very open about. There was, like, an article on the Huff Post, like, we talk about Father's Day with Art Alexakis from Everclear, and I was like, what the fuck are we doing here?
The Huffington Post, man, they stretch it. I wish I had this kind of power. I wish I had this kind of media power that I could think up dumb shit like that and get it to happen.
Yeah.
This is my dream. I one day hope to be that rich or control that much media that I can interview Art Alexakis on Father's Day about father of mine.
On that note, I don't really like this song too much. I feel the same way about it that I did about I'll Buy You a New Life, where it's just like, he's a little too... Both of these songs are about other people, but are still about, like, his ego and, like... It's
yes,
really about
you're right.
Me.
He's really good at conveying that this is about him, even though he's bitching about his dad.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of stuff turns me off. And
agreed. I don't think that I don't like the emotions I feel listening to this song because of the content. I don't like the song. The only part of it is because I remember how much it got played. Mm-hmm. I wonder if any of us really realized what the... I don't think that I had a scope of what the lyrics were about. Like, I mean, I obviously knew, but, like, I couldn't, like... I didn't attach emotion to the lyrics at that age.
Yeah, and maybe if I had a terrible relationship with my father... Like, I don't have the best relationship with my father, but he was around, you know? And maybe I would feel differently, but I don't know. It's...
This is the new age version of Cats in the Cradle, by the way, right?
Ooh. Well, see, there's a song that can, even though I think it's really saccharine, there's a song that I think is more show don't tell than this is. Like this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Agreed. I'm just saying, like, I feel like this is the Everclear take on that song.
Yeah. It's a poor imitation of that. Sure. Absolutely.
So that's what I think about when comparing the two, I'm like, oh, Cats in the Cradle is a fucking awesome classic song. And even though it's about, like, you know, torn kind of father-child relationship, it comes off a lot better than this does.
Oh, in every possible way.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'd say, kind of a pass on this song, but
I'm
generally sour
again
on Everclear in general. I gave up Everclear while I was in college. Hey.
Hey. Ha, 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 ha.
All right, so the next song. Speaking of college, I didn't even intend that transition. Sublime's What I Got.
I don't even know what we can say about this song. It's just fucking classic. You'll hear this song. This is the epitome of barbecue music.
Yep.
Like, you just want to be outside, like, in the summer, kind of at dusk, and just, like, you know, still grilling, and, like, you know, there's, like, girls running around, but they're not even scantily clad. They're just, like, laughing and talking, and everybody's smoking weed. That's it.
It evokes a good feeling, but I generally don't like this song, and I don't really like Sublime.
What?
Yeah.
Really? I see. I hate, like kind of stoner music, and Sublime's, like, the one band that I'm like, okay, I can deal with Sublime. Because they're just, like, it's just, like, this feel-good kind of, like, you know, like, kind of poppy, but, like, not, it's non-offensive. It's like cake to me. This is what this is.
I really hate the song Date Rape in, like, every way. I would say it's probably one of my least favorite songs that's ever been written. I can totally get behind the backyard vibe of, like, Santeria.
Oh yeah, dude, that's it's this, the Chili Peppers, like, you know, all these kind of, like, California, like, bands that were just, like, not jam bands, but, like, you know, were just, like, just playing and having fun, like, surfer kind of music. I like it.
Yeah,
Sublime is not a band that I would listen to
right
when I'm, like, doing work. But at the same time, like, if I'm grilling, like, for sure, if somebody's playing Sublime on, like, you know, a fucking, like, Bluetooth speaker, I'm like, oh, yeah, awesome, cool, it's perfect.
Yeah, I'd much rather have them as a single song than I once took a drive from college to someone's house party, and it was, like, 2 hours away.
The fuck were you driving 2 hours for a house party?
Well, we're staying for the weekend. Like, his parents were gone, so we're going back to his house for the weekend, and we're gonna get a bunch of beer, and, like, we're just 21. And they played that Sublime album the whole way down, and I was just like, wow, I really don't like this band.
No, yeah, so this is a thing. I think you gotta cut some other shit into Sublime. I don't think I could listen to Sublime straight through, and no. I never have. Like, it would get very Dave Matthews-y to me very quickly. Like,
I'm,
you know what I mean? Like, it would get, like, it's too slow to have everything, but, like, if you cut in some Chili Peppers and shit, then it wouldn't be too bad.
And I think a part of it does come from living in New Jersey. I mean, I don't get, they were, like, a California band. I don't get why New Jersey loves Sublime so much.
It was everyone. It was everyone at this time. Every college kid at this time loved Sublime. It wasn't right. Jersey. It was everywhere.
Well, there's a game that I like to play when I'm out with my friends at a bar. Any bar that has a DJ that's playing, like, not just, like, modern pop, like, we'll play, like, you know, like, those bars that have, like, the 90s nights or whatever.
Yeah.
Or a bar with a jukebox, we play Sublime Bingo, where we...
Oh, damn, it's really that bad?
Oh, Price is Right rules. You say how much of a length of time will we be here before a Sublime song is played. Winner gets his drinks.
Wins.
They get their drinks for free for the rest of the night from everyone else. And if there's a jukebox or if there's DJ playing 90s, you're guaranteed to hear Santeria, maybe even Date Rape. But Karaoke Night's a good way to play it too. It's everywhere at these fucking bars, and it's just the kind of bars that I end up in sometimes, even though I know I hate them.
Yeah, what
them.
The fuck kind of bars are you at? That's what I'm trying to figure
out. It's at a lot of bars. Like, any bar with a jukebox, you're gonna get Santeria at some point. And I think I've just grown, I just have this thing against Sublime, and I think a part of it is the fact that I hate Date Rape so much.
Did you get scorned by a girl that likes Sublime or something? What the fuck's
going
on here?
No, I've never dated a girl with dreadlocks.
Patchouli oil.
Hangs out in those East meets West stores at the mall.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think it was just the time and the place that I...
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's just...
Lot of bands and shit that I don't like just because of, like, my age at the time and, like, where I was and just, like, other people liking it. And I'm just like, fuck everyone that likes this.
Yeah, and this isn't... I mean, this song doesn't offend me. I don't hate this song. I wish it was Santeria, but I'm glad it's not Date Rape if I had to listen to a Sublime song.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. I like Sublime. They have a place for me. They're definitely not, like, my favorite band of all time. I've never seen them live. I won't go see the Bad Fish cover band of Sublime, like a lot of people do, but I wouldn't mind seeing them.
Yeah, I kind of have to wonder if that's offensive to people who, like, really loved Sublime, is that they're coming back around again with a new singer.
I don't think. I think that they really... What? Wait, are you talking about, like, the Bad Fish cover band, or are you talking about Sublime coming back with a new singer?
The coming back with a new singer.
Who is it? Sublime with Rome? Is that what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I think that's right. I saw... I live right near a big venue, and I saw Sublime with... I don't know. I don't pay much attention.
But Sublime isn't the whole... okay, so I don't know my Sublime history, so send me hate mail about this, but didn't, like, the original... like, guy from Sublime die before the band ever became famous?
Yeah, yeah. Bradley Nowell is dead as hell from a heroin overdose.
Yeah, and, like, was he, like, the singer?
Yeah.
Okay, so then, like, you can't be like, the other dude is, like, a great singer. Like, you can't be mad that they replaced the singer now, because we're on number two. So, like, you're just getting, you know, updates.
I mean, I wonder, I think people are happy that they get to see Sublime, who discovered them after that they died, but I wonder if, like, the real hardcore, like, fans are like, you can't replace him. It's like...
I don't think they ever had
this
hardcore
is the Sammy Hagar Van Halen. You can't have this.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
But maybe, I wouldn't know, because I'm not a fan, and I don't really know any fans of them to that extent.
Same. So. I need to figure this out. But, yeah, okay. Yeah, those are my thoughts on Sublime.
All right, cool. Well, what are your thoughts on the Backstreet Boys' I'll Never Break Your Heart?
I generally do like the Backstreet Boys. I don't, like, like you have hinted before, and we didn't talk about this yet, though, I always kind of preferred NSYNC, but I hated both at the time. At this point, I was already listening to rap music, and I specifically remember being in a classroom, and some other kid coming up to me asking me if I liked Backstreet Boys or NSYNC better, and I said, fuck both of them. I listen to Eminem, is what I said.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, like, at
that
the same
age.
Time, like, what?
That age, that time.
Yeah, it was, like, that age, that time. I mean, like, overall, I didn't hate it. Like, but, like, I wasn't into the, like, manufacturer. Like, I didn't care who won TRL. I was always watching for the videos behind that anyways. This one is probably, like, one of the worst Backstreet Boys songs, though. I don't like the song itself. I hate these, like, I guess they're all kind of love ones, but I really specifically hate the love ones. I kind of like the more fun ones. Backstreet Boys had some fun upbeat shit. They have, like, stupid-ass glasses. Like, those fucking glasses in the video are so stupid.
Yeah.
It was cool, though. I do like I did like whatever the blonde one, the cute one that everybody liked, that one.
Nick Carter?
Yeah, okay, yeah, Nick Carter. He, his, like, goofy-ass dirt bike pants and stuff, I thought that was pretty cool. And I remember being like, dude, those were some pretty cool clothes. Like, even back in the day, I was like, I like those pants with, like, the giant graffiti writing down the side and 40 sizes too big.
Were you too young to own a pair of either UFOs or Jenkos?
No, dude, I had a bunch of Jenkos.
There you go. Okay. My parents would never let me have them.
What?
I wanted them, and I'm glad they never let me.
What communist household did you ever grow up in?
Well, yeah, my father's got a Trump sign in front of his house, so there you go.
Make America great again. Uh-huh. Fuck Jankos. Yeah. I think about this kind of stuff a lot, like, at the age that I'm at, that if I were to ever have children, what kind of fads would I let them participate in?
Sure.
Because you can either go, like, no fads at all, and then, you know, you were okay with not having Jenkos.
They did cave and let me have a pair of UFOs.
That's even worse. What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a backward ass. No wonder he's voting for Trump. That makes no sense. yeah. I reminisce a lot about fads, and I think that they're good for pop culture. I like them in society. I mean, like, you know, there's obviously, like, limits to it and stuff like that, but if I had kids, I think I would let them participate in a lot of them.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think you want to let your
inclusiveness,
kids feel
and
inclusive,
let them, inclusiveness, but letting them feel them, like, make their own way, kind of. The thing is, like, fads nowadays are so fucking stupid. Like, you know, like, we had giant pants, like, nobody's clothes fit. Okay, cool. But, like, everybody did that. Like, now it's, like, fads are so weird and, like, money-driven. You know, like...
Yeah.
the fat of your clothes not fitting wasn't, like, necessarily, like, you had to buy, like, this one oversized shirt. It was that, like, every shirt was oversized.
Yeah. That's completely true. You know, I went to, a couple of years ago, the girl I was dating at the time, her friend threw a party, and the theme was middle school. And okay. So we all tried to dress like we were in middle school, and I just
you
ended up going...
You have a lot of white friends, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I ended up...
Only white people love theme parties.
Oh,
I hate theme parties
I
so much. But yeah,
I'm white as fuck.
I know. I mean, same, but white people fucking love theme parties.
No,
sorry, I'm...
No, no, it's okay, fine. Man. I ended up going to a thrift store and just buying pants that were way too big, like a fat dude's, like, size 44s.
Yeah.
And wore them as JNCOs on, like, a silkscreen shirt with flames on it.
Oh, dude,
and
yeah,
I spiked up
yeah.
my hair, and I realized
JNCO
that I was just dressing like Guy Fieri. Like, that's...
you nailed it. I had a JNCO shirt that had flames on it. That's how cool it was.
I had a...
yeah.
I had a silkscreened shirt with Dragon Ball Z characters on it, and I didn't even watch Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, God, that makes my head hurt. We were so fucking stupid.
Oh, yeah. That's
Dragon
the thing,
Ball
like,
Z is dope, but yeah...
Fads
God.
Are, like, inherently stupid, and I wouldn't even... I'm never having kids, but if I did, like, I wouldn't even try to understand what these fads were. Like, as long as the fad is not, like, the knockout game, it's like, cool, you
yeah,
do
yeah,
you.
Yeah, 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 yeah. As long as it's not, like, microwave my phone, I'm
We're gonna
I'm
huff
okay.
air conditioners.
yeah. yeah. Duster, man. It's spray duster. Yeah, I think so, too. I don't know what the fuck I would do. Kids are so weird nowadays.
Yeah, it's not even worth trying to figure out what it's like. They have so much technology. Like, kids, it's a different way of growing up. And it always is a different way of growing up, but now you can't understand it. It's like...
No, we, like, I've read a lot of articles about this, about how it fits this because we are the nostalgia generation.
Right.
In the sense that we literally watched the world completely change within our lifetimes. Like, we grew up with VHS, and now you can Netflix stream a movie. Like, there's, like, so much shit that we just watched become completely outdated in our lifetimes. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I can't relate to my parents, but I can't relate to children either. Like, we're kind of, like, this lost middle generation. It's weird.
Yep. I'm completely on board with that. And I guess that tangent shows how little we give a shit about this song. It's just not that interesting.
Sorry. Yeah, no.
No,
it was,
we're all about tangents on Now and Again.
Okay, cool. Yeah, this was just... It's just a very uninteresting... Like, they... Of all the Backstreet Boys songs that were cool and all the interesting music videos and, like, when they did the music videos that were on making of the video and whatever, this one's kind of bland. We get, like, again, like we were talking about earlier, like, you get these manufactured personalities and they're all so fucking vanilla. It's like one dude has guitars in his room and the other one just has a bed because he's a player. And then the other one has all the fucking comic book anime shit. Yeah.
And I'll guarantee you Nick Carter did not own a silkscreened Dragon Ball Z shirt.
No, I had this thought when I was watching the video, is do you think they let them pick their personalities, or they definitely gave them their personalities?
They definitely gave it to them. Maybe they had something to say about it, but I definitely think they handed that shit directly to them.
I think even worse, that they tried to come up with personalities themselves that they thought were cool.
Oh man, so do you think Nick Carter was like, yeah, I'm totally gonna be the anime kid?
I think that he thought it was comic books, and they just really poorly delivered it.
I could see that. He's like the young, cute boyish.
Yeah, yeah.
One.
He was like, I like to draw. Maybe some comics would be cool. And they'd be like, yeah. And then I really wish that I knew some facts about that video and if they were his drawings, because that would just make this so much better.
But then they give them each girlfriends who like fit the theme, and his looks like she should be on a lot of Molly.
Yeah,
and there's no way. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's no way. Like, they gave that to them. That was some, like, old ad execs idea.
Yeah, yeah. This is why Zack Attack began, is because I love the idea of, like, you know, 50-year-old dudes in suits trying to convey pop culture to the people in the generation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's just completely manufactured, and you're just like, who the fuck cleared this? Why didn't you just get, like, six teens in a focus group to be like, this shit's lame?
Because I think it is lame, but I think the teens were just kind of looking at them. Just like, oh, yeah, your shirt's
it was
kind
so
of unbuttoned,
sheepish, right?
And you've got a flat chest.
No, it wasn't even unbuttoned. He had the fucking Fabio shirt on that was like half, it's like a half-cut shirt, like a girl's shirt that like stops with no buttons, but just flaps.
Yeah, they're so hairless and like,
I know,
and young,
I know.
And it's just like, because they have to seem, even like the bad boy one who's wearing those stupid ski goggles, like, even they have to just appear as inoffensive as possible. And I mean, that's kind of, that's what the song is too. It's like, I'll be the one who's always there. It's the most,
I
like,
will never
basic
be a bad
rom-com.
Yes.
Exactly. Even though the song is a little, it's like very nice guy anthem, like, oh, why do the girls always like the ones who'll break their heart? And I'm always here and I'm pining for you.
Yeah.
Like, but that's not what adult women necessarily want. Like, that's what a girl
that's what a 14-year-old girl wants.
Their idea of romance is, like, based around The Notebook. Like, that's what...
Yes.
That's who consumes.
Dude, I was saying about how much I wish I was Nicholas Sparks the other day. Dude, this shit is, like, cookie cutter, slap a different cover and a dumbass title on it, and you can just sell fuck tons of this shit, so...
Right around when Twilight was released, you had, like, Twilight was the main one. There weren't all these other ones, but I said to so many friends, I'm like, why don't I just write some piece of shit about, like, a mummy that goes through time and falls in love with a Frankenstein or whatever.
Yeah.
And then all of those came out, and there was, like, the SNL parody about, like, two Frankensteins falling in love. And that was, like, a year later, and I was just like, man, I really...
Dropped the ball on that one.
By
you
not
did.
Selling out at all. Like, I should have just
you
jumped right on
it,
that.
You should have done it, dude. You should have fucking did it.
I missed the boat.
Did you... So, is the dude with, like, the kind of ponytail in this, is he Hispanic?
I have no idea.
Do you think they... I think they either tried to make him look a little ethnic, or they definitely whitewashed the fuck out of whoever that was.
Wait, is he the one that's... Okay, so I'm clicking through the video. He's not the one that's in
the Fabio
extremely...
Shirt.
Yeah, so... There's one guy that's in an extremely Native American themed house, and I think he's probably not Native American.
No, no, no. That's like, that's Nick, that's, you know, parody Nick Lachey from Backstreet Boys. He's like the other one that looks just like Nick Lachey, but just the Backstreet Boys version of him.
The one with like the goatee and mustache, he's the one that they slam into the interracial relationship, which I think they felt,
so they,
again,
what they do to
marketed.
Him.
Like, that was focus grouped as fuck, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, and
this
he's the older one,
is.
So he was the one that, like, the girls really didn't kind of like anyway, so, like, they just gave him this. But, yeah, no, the one with the fucking, with the Fabio shirt is the one that, what's his name?
I don't know what any of their names are other than Nick Carter. Is he the one who's in, like, the guitar's room?
No. He's the one that's just, oh, god damn it. Now I have to look these fuckers up. God.
I had this conversation on the last episode. It's like, I only know Nick Carter, and Nico was like, well, what about Howie? And I was like, I don't know.
Brian Littrell, AJ McLean, was he the old Howie Duro? Maybe that's the one that's the one that they kind of make look a little... I think it's the shirt throwing me off. Maybe I'm just being borderline racist with imagining that he's Hispanic because of this Fabio shirt going on. Yeah, it's him.
Well, see,
Howie Duro... Duro,
I kept wondering if this one guy had Native American roots, and maybe
no,
I'm
he's
being
way
racist
white.
By assuming
that's,
he does not.
That's he was definitely the way right, the way white one. So yeah, no, oh yeah, he's Puerto Rican. Okay, there you go. His mother was Puerto Rican, so I was right. Yeah, they're just whitewashing him. Like they let him have the ponytail and the Fabio shirt, but they don't let him not be white.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
See, because you didn't even notice which one I was talking about, saying that there's the Hispanic one.
No, they really... Yeah, none of them... It's weird, like, they all get to have their manufactured personalities, but none of them get to be anything but something that will appeal to a 14-year-old white girl who has their parents' money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... It sucks. Maybe we should make, like, a very, like... What it... Like, we should make a boy band that's, like, new age... Dude, I really want to come up with one of these fucking million-dollar ideas like this, so...
Isn't that just One Direction?
No. One Direction's all white kids. You want the mom-approved version of One Direction, which is everyone has their own ethnicity, all their ethnicities are important, they all have distinct ethnic personalities.
So, like, the one that's the one that the Tumblr kids can get behind?
Yeah, like the American Girl doll version of... A boy band. That's what we need to come up with.
sad thing is, that's probably the one that's not marketable even today.
At all, I know, right? Like you'd be like, you know, like, face of the world, like, we could do this. Even Bono would be like, fuck those guys.
I can't market that.
Yeah.
Nobody buys music anymore anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of buying music, man, we're just transitioning the hell out of this. The man who owns Tidal, Jay-Z.
Yes.
He's next with Hard Knock Life. And it's very tough to find this video online because Tidal just is purging Jay-Z and other artists from YouTube.
Yeah.
The video's not interesting anyway.
What? Really? I think it's classic, dude. I really like this video. I'm a huge Jay-Z fan. I think he is going to go down as the greatest rapper of all time. Over Biggie, Pac, anybody else. Jay-Z has the most great albums. I like all of them. I have seen him before live. I think he's cool. I dig that he's with Beyonce. Like, I like everything about Jay-Z. I'm a big fan.
I like Jay-Z. I think this song is fantastic. I just said the video wasn't, you know, that special. Whoever's idea was to sample Annie is, I mean, obviously Jay-Z's idea, I assume, but that's brilliant.
It wasn't. Let me look up who. No, no, definitely not. It definitely wasn't his. Hard Knock Life, Volume 2. Let me find out who the producer of this one is. This is pre-Kanye era Jay-Z, by the way. So, the 45 King is who, DJ Mark the 45 King. I don't know who this is.
Well, he had a fucking brilliant idea.
Oh, yeah, dude. Well, I mean, this was hip-hop at the time. Hip-hop at the time was all samples.
Oh, yeah.
It was all just, like, one sample that everybody knew, and then a bass line, you know? Like, so, yeah, this is what we get. We got, on this album, you have production from Swiss Beatz, DJ Premier, Jermaine Dupri, Dame Dash. Timbaland was on this album, but this was pre-Kanye Jay-Z, which I think is really interesting to see, like, the transition of, like, when he picked up Kanye and how the music changed.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think the video is interesting, dude. I like that they had the girl play Annie. Like, we get our first hints of a black Annie here.
Yeah.
And it took them 15 years to fucking make it, but this is the first time we see it.
You're absolutely right.
And she slays it. She's the best part of the whole music video.
Yeah, that I will completely agree with you on that one.
Like, I get that I maybe over-like the video because of the rap nostalgia factor for me. Mm-hmm. I like the bodega shot. I like the sitting on the stoop. I like the walking through the hood. I miss when hip-hop videos were this. I really like when Jay is on the stoop and you see the little girl push him and he laughs like really hard and like,
yeah,
is like that's very genuine. It was like a really cool thing. So that's,
and
those are the reasons why I like the video.
It's very, now this could be me finding a version that was like artifacted out or whatever due to it not being on YouTube and not in high quality. It's a very orange video as well. If I remember correctly,
No, it wasn't orange. It was actually more like gray, honestly, because it matched the album. It was like a black and white kind of feel, and that was before.
I gotta try to find it now. So before I, yeah, see, you type that in, and it's nowhere.
It's not as orangey as it appeared in.
I see what you're saying. It's more like sepia toned. Well, it reminded me, you know, when I'd seen it, I thought it was more orangey, and it reminded me a lot of Spike Lee's "Do the Right Thing." With a lot of those New York
maybe,
shots, those bodega
maybe
shots, just people sitting on a stoop or against a brick wall.
Yeah, but that was the reality of what New York was like at the time. Which is cool,
absolutely,
to me.
And that's one of my favorite movies as well. And I kind of got that vibe from the video.
Yeah, man, this is. I don't see. I hate to think that this is probably one of Jay's like most famous songs, right? Like, it has to be, like, one of the hits. It was for a while. Like, this was what everybody knew Jay-Z for, was, like, the fucking Annie cover song.
Yeah, if you're asking an average person on the street, which statistically is probably, like, a white person, what Jay-Z song do they know? I think it's this or 99 Problems.
No, I don't even think it's 99 Problems, dude. I don't think that one's even close.
Yeah.
No, no way. It has to be like that or like some like Rihanna crossover song or something.
Umbrella?
Yeah, like Umbrella, I bet, is like something you'd get a lot. But if you're like, name a song that just Jay-Z was in, like, you would get that.
Can I Get It might be a one up there, because that had such a big crossover, because it was in the Jackie Chan movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe. People love Jackie Chan, dude.
Oh, in 1999, people fucking love Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. I'm sure Chris Tucker still wishes it was 1999.
Yeah, I'm sure he does, too. Okay, here. Okay, I remembered that I had an interesting Jay-Z story.
Yes. I wasn't going to bring it up. I'd forgotten already because I have been drinking. Please share your Jay-Z story.
I remember a story. Jay-Z did an interview that he's talking about him and Big were hanging out. And this was, like, you know, around Bad Boy time, and before Jay was kind of big, and, like, you know, he was just hanging out with Biggie. Biggie was, like, already making it. And he says he remembers a time that he and Big were hanging out, Puffy calls him, or Puffy's paging him, right? And he's like, yo, fuck that dude, like, whatever, he's lame, we're chilling, you know, like, whatever. And Puffy shows up to the place that Big was and was like, yo, we gotta go. And Big was like, okay, cool. And, like, just, like, left immediately. And Jay was like, I realized that, like, at that moment, that Puff was the one signing the checks. And I was like, yeah. Like, he was really in control of hip-hop at this time. Like way deeply ingrained in hip-hop, so.
And now he's just in control of really shitty vodka.
Yeah. Dude, what else does he have? Didn't he just, like, build a school or something? Or was that Jay that just built a school?
I don't know.
Maybe both of them did.
That's good.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think Jay-Z is great. In college, I was writing for the school paper, and I was doing music and film reviews. And I don't think anyone ever read our college's paper, because we came from a very, you know, very tiny college.
Yeah.
And the only time that I it was the American Gangster soundtrack, and
which was fucking terrible. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. And I wrote a fairly negative review of it. But most of my review was like, it's just not up to Jay-Z's level. Like, this could be better. And agreed. That was the only time I ever got hate mail.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Damn.
The only time I was like, oh, someone's reading this, was when I took a little bit of a shit on Jay-Z.
Yeah,
and that says a lot about him, man.
Jay-Z fans are strong. They're only fans worse than Jay-Z fans are Beyonce fans.
Well, and that's there's a lot of crossover because of you know the Illuminati that they're in.
Yeah. Do you think maybe that the girl that's in the Hard Knock Life video is a clone of Blue Ivy from the past, from the future?
Yes, 100%. Yes,
I think the Illuminati created her. Put her in the music video. That's why Jay is so happy in the video. And then she became Blue Ivy later.
My favorite Jay-Z fact is he got sued by the professional wrestler Diamond Dallas Page for using
the diamond
symbol. Yeah. That was the Diamond Cutter logo. Yeah, and
yeah,
he got sued and had to pay DDP.
Oh, really? He lost it too?
Yep.
Fuck. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yep, he got diamond cut.
I love that there's a picture and a famous, like, you know, Twitter kind of comedian guy that just, like, you know, just like a normal dude, but he just, like, makes commentary on pop culture, especially hip-hop culture. And he had a picture of Jay-Z and Obama, and it just said, remember that he started out as a crack dealer.
I mean, it's...
It's the American... Dude, Jay-Z is the American dream. Like, he came from, like living in Marcy Projects, like, selling crack to... married to Beyonce, one of the most, like, richest music artists.
Owns
ever.
A fucking basketball team?
Owns a fucking basketball... Well, that was, like, controversial. He only owned a little piece of it, right?
Isn't that, okay.
Like, the thing was always,
like
the
that.
Russian dude owned most of it, and Jay-Z was just, like, put his name on it for, like, the... He already sold his part of it.
Oh, did he really? He's
yeah,
still an entrepreneur, though. Like,
he is an entrepreneur. He definitely made money on fucking Rock-A-Ware. He sold off Rock-A-Ware, made a ton. He made... you know why he sold as part of the Nets? Is because now he started that sports management company. And he couldn't... It was conflict of interest for him to own part of the Nets and represent sports. He represents one of the Yankees. Who is it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, he represents one of the Yankees. Like, he's, like, their sports agent.
That's fucking insane.
Like, well, I mean, like, his
awesome,
company...
But...
Yeah, his company, whatever. I'm sure it's not Jay's, like, going to bat for him for contracts, but... Yeah, he now owns this weird Rockefeller company that runs sports like people's.
Yeah, it's and cool. And right now, I mean, I don't even think that. I mean, we're talking. You can't separate Jay-Z in 2016 from Beyonce. I think at this time, you know, I think Beyonce is. I don't even think Destiny's Child is a real thing just yet.
In 1999, really?
Yeah, because on the next episode, Beyonce is a video babe. She's just
what?
This, yeah,
she's, dude, I didn't even know that. What, when was she a video babe? When did this exist?
Well, stay tuned for next episode, and you'll hear me and Joey Lewandowski talking about. He watches the video, and okay.
No, they were signed in 1996 to Columbia Records.
Okay, well then they hadn't taken off yet because spoilers. Episode 3 was recorded before episode 2.
That's fine.
But he watches this video from this, I don't even remember the guy's name because he's a nobody, but the mute babe in the video, and she's not like in a bikini or like, she's not like a sexy babe. She's like the, I'm being romanced, like, wearing like a long evening gown, being
really?
Showered with flowers, babe. But she says nothing. I don't think she's Beyonce yet.
Oh, damn. No, because, look, 1999 was The Writing's on the Wall, so, and that was Bills, came out July 27th. It, actually, this album, it was that the same day that Now came out? I think that was the same, July 27th, 1999.
So it's coming, so she'll make her way onto Now in, like, two or three more volumes then.
Yeah, right, because this one got released, what was the date, like, July something?
Yeah, it's somewhere around there.
Okay, yeah, so, like, the next week after Now 2 came out, you dropped Bills, this had... Bugaboo, Say My Name, Jumpin'.
Yeah.
This was it. So, like, they existed, but you're right. Like, she wasn't Destiny's Child. She wasn't Beyonce yet.
She still had a Knowles attached to her name.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, not too long from now, both of them are going to be the power couple. And you're going to get the whole internet in a furor when you even just reference the idea of them breaking up.
Send us hate mails about Beyonce, please.
It's me. I'm Becky with the long hair. Or the nice hair, or whatever. I don't even remember. That was such... Like, that album's great, don't get me wrong. But there
I've
was such
to it,
a stink over that whole thing that I was just like, I hate this.
No, it's great. This is the fucking... Beyonce did... Also, musically, they're geniuses. Jay-Z with the... I'm going to sell a copy of my album with every Samsung phone. Highest... opening day album release ever.
Okay,
right?
You can't applaud that and then talk shit about U2, which did like the exact same thing.
Yeah, but U2 forced you to like have the but U2's album sucked, and I guess Jay-Z's probably did too. I don't even really know what album that was, the like bullshit one that he
Do you think he lost something when he became an entrepreneur musically?
I think that it's harder to get good verses out of Jay now, and I think that he knows that as well, and I think that that's why we don't get as much music from him.
Yeah, there's that old saying, like, art from adversity. I think when you are fucking loaded, it's a lot harder to be creative.
Yeah, dude, he just doesn't give a fuck. I like that, but, and also, he doesn't need to carry the team right now. He has Beyonce.
Yeah.
Like, they're a team, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're obviously, like, together and, like, and seem to be doing relatively well. Like, I don't know what their relationship's like, but, like, if they are a team, then he's like, fuck this shit, I don't need to do this anymore. Beyonce can carry us for, like, I paved the way, and I know Beyonce had Destiny's Child money, whatever, right? But, like, Jay was, like, slaying it. He had the Rockaware money and, like, all the business shit. And now he has Beyonce, and he's like, you carry the music money, and, like, I'll just deal with this shit, so.
Yeah, you're right, though. You're right, American Dream.
It's awesome. On a cool note, I just looked up the American Gangster album, and Sean Puffy Combs is credited on producing, like, more than half the album.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's first credit for producing and
it's
a lot
not good.
Of the album. Yeah, it wasn't good. A cool Jay-Z fact that I really like, and I really like this idea, is that Questlove gave Blue Ivy an iPod when she was born. Did you know this?
I did not.
And it is a huge iPod, and he gave it to her with like 1,000 of his favorite songs on it, and he adds a couple hundred every birthday that she has.
That's a pretty dope gift.
Right? Isn't that cool? And, like, Questlove is, like, you know, super crate digger, like, music head. So, I'm sure I would really, really like for this to one day leak of just like the track list of Blue Ivy's iPod.
Oh yeah. You know what? I guarantee you that track list goes up on Tidal one day.
Oh man. Yeah. Like her 18th birthday, Blue Ivy Questlove collab playlist.
The 18-year mixtape. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be great though. I would really like to listen to it just for all of these little tidbits.
Anything else to say about Hard Knock Life?
No, but that, okay, so the Puffy thing brings me into, like, some other songs I was thinking about at the, are we gonna go into the other, do you wanna go through the bonus ones?
Alright, and we're on the last official track of Now Volume 2, which is a weird one. If you can really call it a song.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that this was even
Baz Luhrmann's Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen, and I think we have to kind of go straight into the Wikipedia about this and get the kind of background before we go straight into it.
Okay, give me the yeah, I don't know anything about this. I mean, like, I know who Baz Luhrmann is, but, like, I never knew that he made this weird-ass song. I don't know how the fuck it got on Now or what, but, yeah.
Mary Schmidt's advice column. S-C-H-M-I-C-H. Sorry, Mary, I have no idea how to say your name. Yeah,
Schmicks?
No one's listening.
She's not listening.
The column "Advice Like Youth, Probably Wasted on the Young" was published in the Chicago Tribune on June 1st, 1997. In the column's introduction, Schmicks presents the essay as the commencement speech she would give if she were asked to give one. In the speech, she incessantly recommends the wearing of sunscreen and dispenses other advice and warnings which are intended to help people live a happier life and avoid common frustrations. She later explained that the initial inspiration for what advice to offer came from seeing a young woman sunbathing and hoping that she was wearing sunscreen, unlike what she herself did at that age. The essay soon became the subject of an urban legend, which claimed it was an MIT commencement speech given by Kurt Vonnegut. Despite a follow-up article, this continued.
Pre-internet days,
yeah,
dude.
And
we're
Vonnegut's
talking
lawyer kept receiving requests to reprint it. Vonnegut commented, and this I find questionable, that he would have been proud had the words been his. Well, it's
That's
just
weird
that
enough. I believe it.
I find all of the advice in here like really uninteresting and boring platitudes that would make a really shitty commencement speech or basically anything. But yeah, you're right. It is.
It's the tongue-in-cheek version. But the thing is, like, I would again, if I had a platform, I would do a dumbass commencement speech like this. Like, wear sunscreen.
Yeah, and it is.
Seatbelts
a lot
are
of
cool.
Seatbelts are cool and
smoking
stuff like that.
Is
like,
bad.
You're stuff like, maybe you'll get married, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children, maybe you won't. It's like, that's not really advice.
Yeah.
It's just, like, stuff that you say to people who you know aren't going to listen to you, and I think that's the point of it. But it doesn't make it good or interesting. And it is weird that Baz Luhrmann recorded this to a beat and it became a hit. Like, that's the weirdest thing. Oh yeah, this was on the radio.
It became a hit.
I remember hearing the song.
Was it
on the
really
radio
a hit?
A lot.
Really?
It's
damn,
so,
I never heard this.
It's
song.
Just a thing that could, you know, only 90s kids will get this. But like, this is a thing that could have really only happened in 1999.
Yeah, in the world of Daria, man, this was only a song that could have existed there. The problem that I have with it, though, is, hold on, let me check the date of when this came out, just to make sure that I'm right, but I think, yeah, it was 96, okay, so to me, this is like a shitty version of a DJ Shadow song, and introducing it come out in 96, and it feels like somebody was like, what does DJ Shadow sound like, and Baz Luhrmann was like, kind of like this.
I don't, elaborate, please.
Do you know DJ Shadow, are you a fan? DJ Shadow was like the pioneer of, what is it, sampled hip-hop, okay? He made an album in 1996, which is probably, like, one of my favorite albums of all time, called Introducing. And Introducing was him in the basement of a record store making this entire album of samples from records and just had, like a very early MIDI controller type thing. Mm-hmm. And he would just, like, in a drum machine. And he just sat there with, like, two turntables, you know, like, this, like, little, like, sample machine. And the music is, like, very, like, surreal. And it, like, it stemmed this whole hip-hop sampling. So it kind of feels like somebody's trying to do a DJ Shadow.
I can see that,
take.
Sure.
You have to, yeah, you have to listen to Introducing. It's a great album. He's a DJ revolutionary. And this Yeah, if you listen to it, I think it relates a lot more. It's like this weird, like, you know, because he was sampling stuff, so like all of the vocals in the albums are like, you know, kind of like he would pick stuff from albums that are not musical. Like they would be shit like, you know, wear sunscreen and stuff. Like he would use samples of stuff like that because he was like just starting this whole like revolution of doing that. So they have like a lot of weird sayings and like the vibe is kind of similar. And that's the problems that I had with this song. The video is really cool though, and I think aesthetically, like with like the throwback generation and like of all the shit that people are doing now, this kind of like shitty Microsoft Paint kind of feel, you know, like I like the music video a lot because of that. I don't know if it was really cool back in the day, but like now.
Well, I'm glad somebody had really something good or bad to say about it, because I had very little to even say about it. It's just like, other than it being a really weird thing to have existed as a hit at the time, like, it just doesn't really do anything for me, but that's...
Yeah, it makes me disappointed because I don't think that DJ Shadow got any real recognition outside of the like, hip-hop slash, like, electronic music community, and he's fucking awesome. He's a great dude. Okay, so this isn't about the song, but DJ Shadow, like, you know, made this, like, super revolutionary album. I'm sure that every hip-hop producer has heard this album before, and, he was playing Mansion in Miami, or he was playing a big club. I think it was Mansion in Miami. And, you know, now these clubs are all, like, mainly run by the dudes that are paying for bottle service. You know, like, if you're paying, like, thousands of dollars to be there, you're going to get what you want. And so somebody had bottle service on a night that DJ Shadow was supposed to be there on tour, and they were requesting, like, top 40 hits, and he got thrown off the decks. And it was just, like, such this crushing moment for me, realizing that DJ Shadow got thrown off the decks at a club for not playing shit music when he inspired so much of the music we hear today. It was just like a really like I couldn't believe it. It's like, what the fuck is going on?
Fucking gross and the rich mean.
Yeah, it was bad, man. It's like if you really knew who this was, you would never even think of, like, even if he was playing shitty music, which I doubt that he was, because I saw him, like, I think on the same tour, and it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And he still DJs with like no computer. Like, he just has like fucking...
I'm definitely gonna have to check that out. That's an awesome recommendation.
Dude, Introducing is such a great... I've played that album through many a times. It's like one of the ones that like I can listen to it over and over again. It's just so weird and like, yeah. Okay, anybody else, if anybody is listening to this, and you thought that the last song sucked, listen to Introducing by DJ Shadow. It's really good.
There you go. Alright, so that's the end of Now Volume 2, but there's a lot of songs from this time that didn't make it onto compilations. This is a segment that we call Men on a Missions. I'm a man on a mission, I'm a man on a mission, mission. And the first one, which the song was huge at the time, and I can't believe it never ended up on one of these, is No Scrubs by TLC.
It was never on a Now.
Nope.
Was any TLC song on a Now album?
I don't think so. I could be wrong about that, but stuff like Waterfalls and Creep were a little too early for the Nows.
Really?
And,
okay.
Yeah, and so this might be the last and only time we see TLC on a massive pop music compilation. This song, we talked about Britney Spears having a ton of longevity. This song, again, you know, you hear those opening notes.
Dude, you still hear girls
in.
Say this shit, yeah. Like, this is, our generation will never forget No Scrubs. I call people scrubs all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, a guy hanging out the side of his
best friend's ride.
But it's still, that vernacular is still used. That slang is all over. Now you get like 13-year-old kids calling you a scrub when you're bad at Counter-Strike. But
they don't know the pain that we went through for this. They don't know.
Have you ever heard the response song to this?
The No Chickens?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like No Pigeons or something like that.
Yeah, No Pigeons was actually a Billboard charting rap song from this year, 99.
Yeah, and it's a direct response to No Scrubs. Yeah. It's supposed to be from the guy's perspective, sing back. It's not anywhere near as good, but it's I always love basically response songs. I find them
same, dude.
Really fun.
Yeah, that's why I love rap beef so much. I love the back and forth of it.
Even outside of rap, when it happens, like, and yes, I agree, the rap beefs are amazing and hilarious. Like Lady Gaga has a song called Summer Boy, which is a response to Don Henley's Boys of Summer from the girl's perspective, and it's really good.
That's okay. Yeah, I get it. I like the being part of the instant generation. I like the rap ones because they're like stupid ass beat, 2 minutes in the studio, song's out. Literally, by the end of the day, you get the response from the other guy. The next morning, you get the response, and it's just like back and forth for like 2 weeks, and it's awesome.
Yeah, they're just Instagramming their responses. It just goes back and forth.
Yeah,
little clips forever.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, I feel like I love it is the most we can say about this song. I mean, like, it's so good. It still holds up super well. The video is really fun. I dig that Fifth Element kind of vibe, but with also that very Busta Rhymes-esque kind of editing and filming style.
Yeah, this was really big at the time. Yeah, this was great. I liked the music video a lot. TLC did a lot of great music videos. They're right up there with Missy Elliott for like some of the best music videos of the time. In this kind of genre, so I like them.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like, I don't have more to say about it. Like, I feel like everyone knows it, and it's really is that good. But I felt like it needed some recognition. I forgot that there was a rap breakdown in this song. I feel like that got edited out of mainstream radio a lot to just get in that 3 minute part.
Yeah,
you have 3 minutes long.
I forget the rap break. What? Yeah, you know what? You know why I love TLC the most?
Why is that?
Because they sing the fucking theme song for All That.
Really?
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah, and they're like on like the first couple episodes. Again, nostalgia generation. I spent, you know, part of the summer watching all the All That's over again, and it was awesome. Highly recommended for anybody that remembers All That even a little bit.
My any attempt I have to do a French accent is just Kenan Thompson in the bathtub. Yeah, that's
with
it.
The chocolate. Yeah,
that's exactly my shitty attempt at a French. I mean that show was doing a lot for a kid show. They were parodying Ross Perot, which is like,
yes,
that's not a kid's thing. Like, you need to have like some level of awareness.
Great,
like, yeah, that show was definitely ahead of its time.
Yeah, and it was
like
the kids' version of SNL.
You
have Kenan now on SNL. You've got Amanda Bynes from All That. Like, that was a lot of shit that came out of there, dude.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, TLC. There you go. TLC did the song for it, which was awesome.
And TLC was great. And I think they would have... I wonder if part of why they don't show up anymore is because of the untimely death of Left Eye.
Yeah, I think it really broke them up, honestly. I definitely agree. If she was still alive, I think that they would have continued on maybe a little bit more. But, you know, we started to see, like, the wave of, like, girl bands kind of dying when Destiny's Child went down and stuff. Maybe there would have been a fight or a split or something. So, I mean, we can reminisce and hope that they would have stayed together and made more music, but I don't know if that's a reality.
I'm glad they didn't, you know, pull a Sublime and replace her and go out.
That was one that...
Leave the memories alone.
Yeah, that was one that I don't know if they could have even tried that. I think they would have gotten pretty much executed. They could have pulled up like one of the reject Destiny's Child chicks. They could have put one of those chicks in.
Yeah, the lost fourth member. the Illuminati sacrificed her to Baal or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, TLC, classic. Maybe a song that a lot of people also remember, but maybe not so classic, and was also omitted from this album, though it was huge at the time, is Lit's My Own Worst Enemy.
Dude, we listen to this song drunk so often.
Oh, it's the only time you can listen to it.
Oh, man, it is such a great song. And I remember singing it as a kid, and it was not as appropriate as it is now. Like, you have to spend many a nights ruining relationships and being a fuck-up to really understand My Own Worst Enemy.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about longevity and things like that, and how you can recognize the opening notes of Baby One More Time. And
guitar, this is the other thing, yeah.
Guitar riffs, you know, we're in a pop age. Guitar riffs, there's not a lot of recognizable riffs anymore, and everyone knows that opening.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I could, as soon as I hear two beats of it, I know exactly what song is playing. I remember the music video vividly. I didn't even need to rewatch this music video. I remember the car on the front lawn and like the vans and like the very punk kind of feel to the video and the standing there with the microphone. Yeah, that this one's awesome.
They're doing like a Big Lebowski Kingpin kind of thing with like that Vegas-y lounge lizard, gross bowling kind of aesthetic.
Oh, I love it, man. It's super Real Big Fish for me, and I'm a Real Big Fish fan. Yeah, so I like everything about this video, and the song's just classic, dude. I like all the memes that are going around now because people say Lit and they're remembering that the band was titled Lit. So my friends have like a lot of memes about like when your band title was way before its time or something, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, I was also a really big Real Big Fish fan around this time. They were one of the bands that. And as Lit was as well, that moved me towards, like, liking my own music instead of just what was on the radio or what my parents were listening to.
Yeah.
There's 100% chance that if I was old enough to go and, like, drive myself to get clothing, I would have definitely owned, like, a thrift store bowling shirt, 100%.
Same.
And I would have filled it with sweat while skanking to sell out, and absolutely.
Dude, Real Big Fish is going on tour again. They're coming through here, so just as a heads up.
I've seen those guys a lot of times. Again, though, that feels like, I feel like my knees just, I don't know if I could skank it out for a whole show anymore.
You don't have to, dude. Nobody does. You just stand around and drink beers. It's a bunch of dudes, like, standing there like, yeah, we're too old for this dancing shit, so we're good.
I feel like a lot of people find this song a little, seedy and grody, like.
What? In what sense?
I think the tone of it, like, the. Maybe not the tone, but like the mood of it. It's like a dirty, dingy kind of a song, but I'm okay with that. Like not lyrically, but it's just like a really garagey.
Oh yeah, it definitely feels like a garage band kind of song, and that's part of the appeal to it for me because this became like a pop hit, but wasn't a pop hit, you know? And I'm glad that everybody kind of embraced this little bit of grunginess that we got from not grunge in the sense of grunge, but griminess maybe. That the song was.
And they have other songs that aren't terrible. I know a lot of people recognize them as like a one-hit wonder. Maybe occasionally people remember them. The song Miserable was because the video had Pamela Anderson in it.
I don't love that
song very much. I think it's a little too, it thinks it's more clever than it is. But it's some other songs that it kind of does my own worst enemy. Like there was a song called Lipstick and Bruises that they had that was, like,
I've
it kind of captured that
else.
Tone again, but it didn't quite. You can never recapture the, you know, the first one.
No, man. They can't. I've never listened to anything else by Lit. But this is, like, a song that tugs on my heartstrings. Like, I will always love this song.
If they were playing one of those summer fest shows and headlining it, I think maybe I'd pay the $12.50 to see them headline a washed-up nostalgia tour.
Yeah. I always imagine that I want to put together a tour that's all one-hit wonders, but they only play the one hit.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't want to see them. Like, I would actually see this band play a whole set, maybe. I'm curious. But, like,
I can imagine they're fun, you know? Like, they're punk dudes. They can't take themselves too seriously. Like,
I don't want to see,
Sesmonic close it. Like, they're not going to closing time it and be all pissed off that you only wanted to see My Own Worst Enemy. Like, they're going to play to you.
This song had, I'm sorry. This compilation had a lot of bands that had, like, multiple hits, so I'm struggling to think of, I don't want to hear, like, a lot of people love that song by Vertical Horizon, like, If You Could Only See, but no one knows another Vertical Horizon song, like, but you know they're gonna play the whole set, like,
yeah,
I don't want that, I'd rather just hear, like, they're a perfect example of a band who should come out and play one song and then get the hook, get them off stage.
Yep, I like it.
But, this is a great karaoke jam, and now is full of great karaoke jams. This is a great one to get drunk and sing with your friends, for sure.
Oh, I get drunk and sing it with myself, but yeah, definitely.
Well, when I get drunk, sometimes I will parody the bridge of this next song, because I think it's maybe the lowest point in music history, and that's Korn's Freak on a Leash.
You You think it's the lowest point in music history? Is that what you said?
Well, that's maybe a little facetious, but I think the breakdown where he does that weird metal scat.
That thing.
Well, now you're doing Disturbed down with the sickness.
No. It
kind of were.
Yeah, it's... I know... Okay. Maybe it came out wrong. Sorry.
Well, because, you know, it's so embarrassing that you don't want to try to actually do what Jonathan Davis is doing in this song.
No, yeah, it's bad. I liked Freak on a Leash. I think that this Follow the Leader was, like, probably my first introduction to Korn because of the age I was. So I have a special place in my heart for everything on Follow the Leader, and I really liked Freak on a Leash, and I really love this music video, dude. The bullet holes, like, through all the thing, that was, like, a super creative music video at the time.
It doesn't hold up visually, like, as much these days, now that, like, YouTube is full of doing that that high frame rate, like, slow motion kind of shot of things, but at the time, it was, like, it's
fucking
very,
crazy,
very
right?
Revolutionary. And this was a Todd McFarlane video, if I'm not mistaken, or at least he did animation. He at least did the animation.
Yeah, I think he just did the animation, but that's, yeah, this video was, like, yeah, you get the fucking, the cartoony parts. Yeah, this was really, I think that this was the pinnacle of Korn for me.
Well, that's not a high bench to clear, though.
No, I mean, obviously not. Like, the other pinnacle of Korn for me would be when they were on South Park, but... Yeah, I think that this is like, because what was the album that followed this one?
Oh, I have no idea.
The one after Follow the Leader. It was like the one with like the doll on it. I saw somebody that had this tattoo and I was like, you are fucking weird, man. Like, how would you get the tattoo of the other one?
Was it right next to a Juggalo tattoo?
Issues. Remember Issues?
Nope.
Okay, dude, you look up the album cover for Issues really quick and you'll instantly remember it.
Well, it had, I don't remember the album. It had, like, the ragdoll with the button eyes on
Yes, it. Yeah. Yes. See, it's an iconic album cover.
I just, I feel like, you know, we talked about how lit, like, there wasn't a lot of guitar stuff at this time. And I feel like if you were discovering your own path in music at this time and you wanted guitar-based stuff, your options were, like, poppy kind of punk stuff, like Blink-182, or Family Values stuff. And I kind of went in the other direction.
What?
Like, more of the pop-punky kind of stuff at that time.
Okay, yeah. You had,
I never
like
really
this...
did the Family Values stuff.
What else is on Family Values?
Like Limp Bizkit.
Oh, dude, I fucking love Disturbed. Limp Bizkit so much. I loved Limp Bizkit.
And who are those guys that do that really weepy... Oh, fuck. It's been a while. Who are those guys? Yeah, those guys. Like, I can never get into that stuff,
really.
Hold
my head up high.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I forget.
I also was a bassist at this time. I mean, still am, but I absolutely hate the bass tone in this song.
Oh.
That, like, super, tuned down. It sounds like an elephant farting. Slap bass kind of thing. It's just, ugh.
Yeah. I don't play any instruments, so I respect everyone that does, and I think I can't hate... There's, like, certain noises that I definitely hate, but I don't have disrespect for certain noises like an artist would, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
You're like, oh, I'm a bassist. I fucking hate this bass line. It's stupid, you know? And I'm like, oh, well, like...
The bass line is probably fine, but you can't hear it because it's tuned so low that it just almost sounds like percussion. It's just like that slapping sound. There's no music tonal
it.
To it. Like, I can't deal it. I actually really do. The end of the song... Where he's doing the part of me, over and over again. That actually builds up to a really interesting progression and riff, and I can dig that part. But overall, like, yeah, I think this is probably the best Korn song, but I also think that's like kicking a 6-yard field goal. Like, it's not...
Yeah, I could understand it. I get you. And then they became like way more punk, like poppy after this. So
there is and this is going to be in the liner notes of the show. It was when I was in college, so we're about 8 years after they had their moment, you know?
Yeah.
MTV tried to revive Unplugged, and they gave, for whatever reason, they gave one to Korn.
Oh.
And there's
how did that work out?
Unplugged version of Freak on a Leash featuring Amy Lee of Evanescence.
That sounds horrible. Was it okay?
It has to be heard to be believed. No, it's atrocious.
Okay.
They've got this string quartet behind them, and they're all wearing these like Eyes Wide Shut masks. And the set, it looks like they stumbled onto a poor imitation of like Sleep No More, and they just sat down and started busking, and it's so fucking bad.
Okay. I don't even want to. Yeah. See, this is exactly what I was just saying. Like, I don't want to listen to it because I don't want to have this song ruined for me. I remember it very fondly.
Yeah. Well, we can come back to this song in a second because we're jumping to a segment of the show called Rap Genius. I done graduated from Versace Junior College. So the website Rap Genius. Anyone from the internet can annotate the lyrics of a song and throw in their opinion about what the song actually means. For example, one of the annotations for Take Me There, in the beginning of the song, someone spells out R-U-G-R-A-T-S, and the annotation is, they're spelling Rugrats because the song goes along with the movie.
Oh, this is great.
Rap Genius annotations are, they're not really the most genius of geniuses. But I'm going to give you the option. Would you like to read the annotations for Freak on a Leash or for Closing Time?
Are we doing both or are we just doing one?
I'll take the one you don't pick.
Okay, I would like to read the annotations for Closing Time.
Okay, so I will read the lyrics. Why don't you start off with that intro paragraph?
Okay, did somebody actually write this?
Yes.
Okay. At closing time, predictably, it's time to leave the bar. The dim lights are gone, replaced by mood-killing brights designed to send the buzzed and drunken people scurrying out. Note the last line. Many people who are struggling, whether it be personally or with a job, drink their sorrows and worries away at the bar. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to go home and deal with their problems, they're welcome to go somewhere else, but the bar is done providing therapy services for the night. That being said, this is actually a metaphor for the birth of his son. Replace the bar with a mother's womb and we've got it. What the fuck? So where did that last line come from?
This is actually apparently...
his explanation for it?
This is his explanation for the song. This is what he insists the song was actually about. So let's go Yeah, well, let's see if we can get there.
Okay, go ahead.
So, open up the doors and let you out into the world.
This is the baby actually entering the world.
Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl.
The birth of the child is the first moment it sees all the lights of the world. it's point. That makes sense. Nailed it.
I'm sure it's a reading.
Crushed it. How many upvotes did that get?
Death of the author. But one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Let's just try this one.
This just plays up the bar metaphor. In reality, telling the baby to finish growing in the womb and get ready for the birth. Additionally, it could also be referring to the speaker himself. He is transitioning from a young adult into a father, so the last call is his final time to drink up before having to mature for his newborn. I don't think a lot of fathers stop drinking. Actually, that would be the moment that I would start drinking more. Okay.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Here is the womb. The baby can no longer stay here, or there. It is time to be born. Dude, this person is... wow, okay.
Yeah, this is...
okay, good.
Like, I always say that Rap Genius is, like, the internet safe space for, like, people who are really into their freshman Lit 101 class.
Yeah, it really is, dude. I didn't realize that it was this bad. I mean, like, I guess, like, a lot of the ones that I do, like, look up are usually rap songs, and a lot of times they're annotated by the rapper themselves, which could be equally as bad. Like, sometimes their explanations are fucking stupid, too. But... you know, the rap ones are a little bit more curated, you know? Like, there's a lot of people that, like, upvote, downvote, edit them, tell people go fuck off. Like, those ones are taken a little bit more seriously because that's where it started. If you're going back on old ones, nobody's really annotating these or really looking up the lyrics because, like, we knew what they meant.
We thought we knew what they meant.
Yeah, apparently I was completely wrong about what Closing Time was about. We have one more.
Yeah, Closing Time. This room won't be open till your brothers or your sisters come.
The clearest line in the song to cue listeners in that this song is not about leaving the bar, but rather about the birth of Dan Wilson's son. Wilson sought to play room as a pun for womb.
Man, that only works if you're like the priest from The Princess Bride and you have like a really bad speech impediment.
Yeah, maybe. This is, I don't ever want to imagine that this is what the song actually means.
Yeah,
you're just, like, slowly ruining the song for me.
This is a guy who thought his band should have been more loved and trying to, like, you can't death of the author yourself, like, when you are the author.
That's
not how that works. Like, it'd be, I don't know. And if you have to have that metaphor and it doesn't work and no one's picked up on it, and you have to go out there and tell people that's what your
song is about. I wonder if it's him that's the one annotating it. Yes, that's... Now, okay, that saved the whole thing for me. I'm imagining him just annotating it himself.
Why didn't anyone get what I was going for? Click, clack, click, clack, click, clack.
Tick, 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 tick. Yeah. Yeah, that makes me a lot happier. Okay, good. I'm just imagining he annotated it. Cool.
I'm in on that. Will you take me through Freak on a Leash?
I will most definitely take you through Freak on a Leash. Do you want to read this top part, or are we just going to go right into the lyrics?
Yeah, I'll jump into that.
Good.
Freak on a Leash was Jonathan Davis's complaint against the music industry that abuses him, leaving him feeling like a freak touring corporate America, fucking making all the money while it's taking a part of me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Lyrics, we'll start there. Something takes a part of me, something lost and never seen. Every time I start to believe, something's raped and taken from me, from me.
This could be how he feels about America. How he's been violated, raped, in parentheses, and how a part of him is being taken away and he doesn't know who or what he is.
Can I take away all this pain? You want to see the light? I try to every night, all in vain, in vain.
Well, he wants to stop his suffering, whether it be physical or psychological or emotional. The part where he says, I try every night, all in vain, which we needed
glad
to
we
repeat
it.
Again.
Yeah, I'm glad we repeated it.
Can be interpreted many ways. I have two I can give.
In
that's
bullet
not
points.
Me editorializing.
In bullet points.
That's literally there.
I'm sure.
He tries to sleep on his problems and hope things get better the next day. Or bullet point number two. he does something at night, or in darkness, to relieve his stress or pain, such as take smoke, narcotics, or cut himself.
This was clearly a, like, 12-year-old trying to annotate Freak on a Leash.
This
amazing.
This is definitely, yeah, someone who picked this up
at a
Hot Topic.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Somebody saw a really cool Hot Topic shirt and then bought the album. Okay. Mm-hmm. Feeling like a freak on a leash, you want to see the light. Feeling like I have no release, so do I. How many times have I felt diseased? You want to see the light. Nothing in my life is free, is free.
This song is a reaction to being paraded around conservative America. playing music that's mere sound seems to clash with the moral values of the majority, and yet making money all the while. Jonathan Davis said in an interview, America was built on the people having the freedom to do what they want. And it just seems like the Christian right wants to take over and take away everyone's rights on things like abortion and just everything.
It's
just so fucking conservative. It's ridiculous. That is some top-notch political commentary. They just want to, like, take everyone's rights on abortion
on
and everything.
On everything. These are... Apparently we started getting annotated by the left here. Okay. You and I were meant to be a cheap fuck for me to lay.
He suffers from consumerism.
Okay.
No one cares about him. Only thing they want is to buy him. Big companies that want to buy some music star to advertise their product. Do you buy any of it?
What black nail polish? Maybe OPI was trying to buy him.
Utilikilts, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe that. Dreadlock making things. Eye contacts. I can't see what big, large companies were trying to have Jonathan Davis being paraded around as their poster boy, but...
Yeah, but I would love to see a car commercial that had Got the Life in it.
I would love to see Jonathan Davis do fucking McConaughey-style Buick ads. Can you imagine that? That's all I'm imagining now that you said car commercial. I also see him driving, like, I got the light, you know, and just, like, turns the light. New head beams from BMW.
Or one of those, like, Dodge car commercials where it's super America. It's like, America, the backbone of this country, was built on Dodge. Abumana, abumanamanima.
Yeah. Oh, these are great, man. You inspired a new game for me play, A Cheap Fuck for Me to Lay. to read some Rap Genius annotations of really old songs.
Yeah, well, we're gonna do it every episode where we can find some terrible annotations
You got lots of time before you run out of gold in this shit.
I certainly hope so.
I think so, dude. I bet any one of these could have been gold. But yeah, you picked some good ones. I didn't know the plight of Jonathan Davis in America. Now I do, and closing time being about birth is one of the most fucked up things I've ever heard in my life. But okay, yeah.
Yeah, so the next time you're at a bar and the lights come up, just think about this song is about how you're actually leaving the womb of your drunkenness or whatever the fuck. No, thank you. No, thank you. What is your name? Dan Wilson. No, I don't want it. You can keep it. I'm going to let this be a song about I'm going home because, the bartenders don't want to be here anymore.
He's
going
to annotate the podcast and tell us how we were wrong about our interpretation of the... of the annotations.
Pitch that to, you said... Your partner is a bartender, right?
Yeah.
Pitch that to her and then write back in.
I will. Yeah,
we will read that on a mailbag episode. I would love to know her opinion on that.
I'm going to tell her as soon as I go to pick her up after this. I promise that I would love to hear her take on it.
Well, hey, it's been we're about to wrap up. It's been a good time.
We usually like to
do some recommendations. If there's anything from this era or from this time, or hey, anything you've just watched, it doesn't matter. Just throw something out there. A bunch of people just listened to us talk about pop music from 1999 for a bunch of hours, and thank you if you're still here. Do you have any recommendations other than a DJ Shadow album that I'm going to go listen to?
I think you should definitely watch Daria. It fits this mood right now. Like, I've just was rewatching it, and it's awesome.
I'm just going to piggyback on you for that one. Yeah, man, Daria was so good.
I forgot a lot of it. It's been a long time. I'm sure that not many people have been watching it recently. Dude, it's good.
I feel like it really grabbed that kind of high school, mid-90s ennui that like we all thought we had, but like maybe it was just manufactured from the time. But like
it's like
doesn't
pre-angst,
matter.
Right? It was I think so too. And like it's so sarcastic and dry, and it was like the girls were, I think Beavis and Butthead is hilarious. Rachel won't watch Beavis and Butthead with me because she doesn't get it, and I get that it's, like, very male-centric and, like, stupid and giggly, but, like, Daria, she will watch, and it's a lot funnier than I remembered it being, even.
Yeah, this compilation was so good, and this might be one of the best nows that there is, at least for a very long time. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to send people away. Like, embrace this era. Like, go look up on MTV some stuff. Like, go look up some Liquid Television or, like, some weird shit from, like, compilations.
Say What Karaoke's, please. Go watch the making of the videos again. Dude, bring yourself right back to this time. It was a great... This was the golden age of music videos. So
watch the best of the real world.
Yeah, dude. Before we had the first real world Road Rules crossovers and like watch that shit. Those were great.
When Mike Mizanin was a guy on a season of The Real World and not WWF champion The Miz.
he had that. When you had Puck and like real alcoholics on The Real World.
Oh yeah, Ruthie, remember her passing out in the shower?
Ruthie was blackout drunk every day. I definitely remember Ruthie. Yeah, dude, she was great. Yeah, she was passed out in the shower. They had to like get her stomach pumped twice in the same season.
And like we can be really cynical about this stuff because we were young and stupid at the time, but like I mean, I guess that's my recommendation. Is just kind of embrace the nostalgia every now and then.
Every now and then. You and Joey are too funny, my friend.
Well, you know what? I have another recommendation, and it's a show called Zack Attack. Where can they find you?
On cageclub.me. You can listen to all things Zac Efron if you think that that we were funny tonight. I think that we take Zack Attack pretty much in the same stride. So it's always a good time for us. Come listen to them, and even if you don't like Zac Efron, listen to us maybe talk a little shit on him that I won't say that on Zac Attack, but I'll say it here. Yeah, we like, laugh about all of his dumbass acting career moves. So, yeah.
Have you guys dug into High School Musical yet?
No, we get there soon. We're really stoked for High School Musical. Joey and I have neither seen any of the High School Musicals. We just hit a Nicholas Sparks one pretty recently. Yeah, it was pretty much like a carbon copy of The Notebook with Zeph and Piper from Orange is the New Black in it instead. It was pretty good, so... Yeah, he's been in actually a lot of really random shit. Like, there was, like, he's been in historical pieces. We've seen him be 50 different jobs in his things. It's great.
Yeah, definitely check out Zack Attack and check out everything on the Cage Club podcasting network. Cage Club, Keanu Club, Monkey Club, cageclub.me.
And that's all for this week. We'd like to thank Joe, too, from Zack Attack for popping out again and having a great conversation. We will be back in November with his Zack Attack partner, Joey Lewandowski. If you like what you're hearing from Now and Again, rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff on iTunes. Check out cageclub.me for more, or join the discussion over at the Cage Club Podcast Network on Facebook. Another thing you can do is just tell a friend. It's a kind of a niche show. We understand that not everybody might be into listening to people talk about pop music from the 90s. You would know better than we do who would like this kind of stuff, so please feel free to pass it on to them. If you've got any feedback, any stories, any of your own commentary on these songs, feel free to write into the mailbag. That's at nowandagaincast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter. That Twitter is @nowagainpodcast. Remember to keep m-bopping your way through life, and we will catch you on the flip side.